This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Together as one, from the past and the present, celebrating culture and spirit, paving the pathway to our future. It's time for dreaming. Urban dreaming. Finding your voice. Finding your spirit. Joy 94.9. Wominjeka. Joy 94.9 would like to acknowledge and pay respect to the sovereign peoples of the past, present and future generations of the Kulin Nations on whose unceded land we work, live and broadcast from. We would also like to acknowledge all our brother boys and sister girls of the LGBTI communities.
Yes, you're on Urban Dreaming. This is Sarami, and we have a special guest here, Matt Coleman.
Hello, hello. Back again.
He's Matt again. And, of course, Chris Tate, our panellist, and of always special guest, that is.
Average guest. I don't know about special.
Yeah, the man, he doesn't talk much, but he does a lot of pressing buttons. So, just to let you know, guys, unfortunately, Miscellaneous cannot be with us this week. She is once again flying over, you know, doing a little trips over here and there, gallivanting the countryside. And, good luck to you, Mrs. Lanius. I hope you're listening and, having fun over there in Darwin, the good old NT. I think she's doing a lot of stuff, actually, currently with all the drag. This is like a big drag competition, which is all the First Nations, which is built up towards the end of the year, which is great.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But just before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge as well where the land in which we stand, and of course, is the Wurundjeri land. And we are standing on the Kulin Nations and make respect to the past, present, and future for our elders and obviously our future generations with the young fellas here, you know, because they are our future and they've got big plans for us, I believe. So, Radiothon.
Yeah, how exciting. I mean, it sucks that Miscellaneous isn't here because it's Radiothon week. Like, it's massive. You can win a whole heap of stuff. I'll say I came on the show to tell you exactly what you can win. You could win yourself a Holden Astra. It's automatic for those of you who can't drive a manual like me, but you can head to joy.org.au and sign up or renew your membership until June 30, and you could be buzzing around Melbourne in a little Holden Astra. And heaps of other prizes as well.
Yeah, second prize is a MotoGP 2017 VIP experience. So that's including a helicopter flight for two from Melbourne to the MotoGP and Phillip Island on, entry with the VIP hospitality lounge. And that's hosted by Mick Doohan. So if you're a big fan of the racing cars, then that's something really deadly for you. As well as the Midsummer, that's the third prize festival, which is the VIP package. And that's for two VIPs, invites to the program launch and the festival, exclusive access to the VIP bar, discounts, ticket deals, and one official VIP function during Midsummer and double passes to three key Midsummer festivals during 2018. Pretty deadly, eh? All right, guys, so coming up on this show, though, we will be talking a little bit about the International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia and Biphobia. I recently just came back from the vigil on solidarity for gay and bi men in Chechnya, and that was held at the Fed Square. And we may be doing a couple of songs or something like that along the way. We don't know yet. See how we go.
Keep listening, Urban Dreamers, and you might find
Yeah, stick with us. And, of course, we've got a fantastic interview. That's with the Electric Fields, a brilliant band at that. So, yeah, they'll be on with us probably from 8:30. Oh, sorry, 8:20.
8:20.
Just to quote that. Don't forget. All right, guys, you're on Urban Dreaming. The time is 8:04. Stay tuned. Too deadly.
Like a bird that's lost its wings, now souls meet again. You hold me deep inside with the force you have within, now souls meet again. Now souls
souls come together like a fallen tree. Now souls come together as you fall through. The love I feel within when our souls meet again. The pain now subsides and you're where you've always been when our souls meet again. And our souls come together like a fire.
That was Jesse Lloyd and Our Souls on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Urban Dreaming with Matt, Sir Rummy, and Chris. That's just some background music. It's not a mistake.
It's beautiful.
At all.
That's what we need more of.
And it is our radiothon here at Joy 94.9. We're raising funds to keep Joy on air, out loud, proud. We're asking you to donate money and join a membership. If you join, you go into the draw to win a Holden Astra. And if you donate, then anything above $10 and in multiples of 10 gives you, so $10 is one entry into the prize to win a into the draw to win a prize, which is a cruise, a 9-day cruise on the Tropical Fruits Caribbean cruise.
New Caledonia.
I've always
Caribbean.
Wanted to go there.
It's all the same, isn't it?
I don't know.
But every $10 is one entry. So if you donate $20, how many entries is that?
Well, two.
That's
My
right.
That's correct.
So Rummy, $50. How many entries is that?
I don't know. I didn't even listen for those. I was too busy reading. Sorry.
Bye.
$5. That's all I'm putting towards. No, joking. I'll definitely put $10.
So head over to joy.org.au, put your memberships in and donations and go in the draw to win some great, great prizes and keep supporting Joy and keeping us out loud and proud. So Rummy.
Yo.
What is happening?
Well, there's so much going on. I just think about, well, recently we've been doing the Urine Boy Festival, so that's just been crazy. And because I was actually on front of house for that, and also performing three different shows. So I'm pretty buggered.
Yeah, dude, you're a busy old black fella. What were you doing?
I went and, well, funny thing was I did three shows. So one was Miscellaneous, of yes. course. Did the little backing dancing for her. Amazing costumes, by the way.
Can people see some photos? Where could they find them?
Yeah, you can probably just check my Facebook. also, we did the political piece, the installation moving piece, which is about the Cape York traditional dancers who were forced to perform, and they were chained up, you know, at their necks, and basically just told when to dance and when not to, and just flogged if they didn't do so. So it was a pretty intense piece, and just walking through the city, it was like pretty much like a silent vigil in a sense. But we did a lot of small bit of poetry, and also some wailing, because the wailing sort of made that, I guess, the feeling of what the piece is about.
And how did the public respond? Because I know seeing some of the photos of you guys, it just, you know, rocked me to the core, and you can't help but be emotional. And I guess maybe that's because, you know, that's my people. But in terms of Melbourne or those that were around the city, maybe not ready for it, how did they respond?
It was insane because a lot of people naturally wanted to obviously see what was happening, and a lot of them were, they just felt obligated to follow us. It's like they just kept following us, and the groups just grew. And when, yeah, if you get a chance to look at some of the photos, you see just a huge crowd of people following us all the way from the Arts Centre right through to the State Library. And it was intense because obviously being one of the performers and, you know, being in that headspace and walking through the city with chains around our necks, painted up in full body ochre, and, you know, portraying the spirits of those people who were treated and maltreated in the sense of not being any given any human rights. Mm. And just seeing some of the responses, some were really amazing. Most, I think, were mostly supportive. But you'd have the odd comment, and it was quite full on, like having the ignorance and some even racist remarks. But, you know, I guess doing that, it's about, you know, performance theatre, not only that, but also showing that we are in our blood, it's embedded in our blood. We can't help but deal with politics all our life, you know. As Aboriginal people, we've had to grow up with that. So it was really empowering, I guess, in the sense that we could portray something that was, I guess, not really known of as well. Not many people knew that our mob were chained up, you know. But yeah, and then the third piece, what we did, the performance I did with Uncle Archie, and that was beautiful too, Uncle Archie Roach. And it was the song where he basically dedicated to his wife, Ruby Hunter, rest in peace. I think the song's more about him saying, you know, it's allowing her to speak to him in spirit and say, look, it's time for you to move on and make a change in the world. So, yeah. Deadly.
Yeah, beautiful. And, I mean, that was what Yirrumbuy Boy was all about, was, you know, telling those stories. A lot of our history is unknown. It's a lot of it is black history, according to Whitefella, and sometimes we just need a festival for Blackfella to celebrate that kind of thing. And you are quite political with all of the things you're doing. Tomorrow is a massive day here, or well, around the world, everywhere. It's International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia and Transphobia. What are you doing for that?
Well, tomorrow I'm going to be in Richmond. I'm going to be doing a panel for discussion on regards to, I guess there's so many people who are talking at the time, but I guess they've invited me because they wanted to get an Indigenous perspective, and also knowing that I come from country, being a gay man and being brought up in country and then moving to the city. And I guess in context of what, you know, how we live our lives, what we've been doing from country to city, and how we deal with our own sexuality. And, you know, I guess it's not different than anyone else in a sense, but I guess they will have certain questions which I'll hopefully answer correctly for them, or, you know, again, whether it's something I even, I guess, you know, when it comes to people yarning, like talking about Indigenous ways, I don't have all the answers. Like, I'm just going to talk from my own perspective, I guess.
Yeah, right. Mm. And that's all you can do. I mean, and if you want to support the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia and Transphobia, tomorrow Joy is emceeing and participating in the event Show Your Colours. That's down at Fed Square from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. So show up and show your support. Wear vibrant coloured clothing to be part of the effort to set a world record for the largest rainbow coloured crowd If you want some more information on that, fedsquare.com/events/showyourcolours. But in terms of supporting Out Loud and Proud, we are doing the Radiothon, so make sure you do renew your memberships or donate, because there are excellent prizes.
Yes.
And the knowledge that you're supporting Joy, keeping us out loud and proud. So I am going to be going around later and asking what Joy means to everyone, but we'll save that for a bit later. Suri, you also... you've just come back from the vigil down at Fair Square. Tell us about that.
Well, let's just say it was pretty intense, knowing that these people, you know, like ourselves, who cannot be themselves, you know, in a country that isn't supported by the government, and basically being told to their families that they need to kill these people who are homosexual or bisexual, and if not, then they will kill them. You know, and I think to myself, like, we have this sense of freedom to be able to tell and express our feelings about who we are and what we do and be opener with our sexuality. And knowing that there's a country or several countries that actually aren't accepting this, that don't see it as normal and consider it a plague, it's quite disturbing. But, you know, I see, you know, the fact that Australia is actually supporting in trying to get these people out of this country and allowing them to come into Australia. Hopefully that's the goal, or at least giving them a chance to go into other places where they will be accepted. I can't comprehend the feeling of knowing that I would never been able to be open about my own self and not get accepted. Like, because I've had a really supporting family, you know, I've never had any issues with my sexuality at all. And the fact that these people actually, sometimes they have to, I guess the idea is people are expressing their own values on people and telling them that you should come out, you know, you need to come out because it's too much. And it's like, well, people don't understand the consequences that could happen. Like, and whether this is in Chechnya or whether this is in Australia, a lot of people have to come, I guess, into their own terms and eventually come out when they're ready. We can't force something onto someone. But there are particular places and countries where you cannot be open because you will either be murdered or tortured for it.
It's not as, like, dramatic, but, I mean, you would know, having lived, you know, up WA, that when I was living out in remote communities, certainly being out... So let's like, make a parallel to Indigenous culture here. Being out and loud and proud in remote Aboriginal communities, for example, is still not really that accepted either. Would you agree? Like, do you think there's still work to be done there? Certainly it's nowhere near what we're talking about in Chechnya, but...
I believe these are the questions I'll be asked tomorrow. And I think what it is we really don't know, do we? We weren't there then. You know, and I guess from what I hear, a lot of our mob, because, you know, men are men and women are women. Men do the hunting, women do the gathering. That's basically the logistics of it all. But I think with, I guess, cultural protocol, there may be a certain degree of, not being able to do certain things. But I personally don't have that answer. I don't know. But from what I hear from my family, it's generally about, you know, if someone loves someone, then they should have that open love for one another. And I also hear that some of it was accepted. Some of it actually was okay because it was just naturally what they, I guess, leant towards. So... yeah, I wish I could give you the answers, but I don't even know myself.
I guess what I was getting at was whether or not it resonated with you more, whether you're more passionate about it because not only are you a gay man, but you're a gay Aboriginal man, and there's...
Yeah. Well, you know, I was brought up in a Pilbara, okay? Mm. So I was brought up in a mining town, and men were men there as well, you know? If you even considered slightly, you know... I guess feminine. It's like, oh, you got to watch that fella, you know. And I guess that's the pressures I grew up with because a lot of my family are in the mining, but, you know, industry. And the idea of me being an artist was like, oh shit, I'm so different, you know. Like, am I going to be accepted? So it wasn't just my sexuality; it was also being in the arts and being completely out of the norm of what I guess the town is about. And so that itself was, I guess, I remained in isolation due to that. But when you think about, I guess, the own pressures about becoming or being open about your sexuality, I think a lot was it like in my own self. I actually put those pressures on myself because once I realized that, hey, I should just be straight out and just be able to tell people what I am and who I am, and should it matter what other people say, you know? My biggest worry was for my family. If I once I got through to my family and let them know, no one else mattered.
And it didn't, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, that's the same in country New South Wales as well. I think living in those bubbles where it's, you know, the boys are footy and it's massive vibrato. If you're a male that, you know, did tap dancing, music theatre or acting or be an artist of any kind or storyteller, then you know, it was a bit harder for you to come out or to come into yourself. And I always say that it's not necessarily coming out so much, it's coming into yourself and being okay enough to be able to share all of who you are. I mean, for me, I say that I always was in a giant dressing room. Like there was no closet, there was nothing. It was just a giant dressing room, and I came out sometimes more masculine, and then sometimes more feminine. So for me, it was more about you know, being able to come into myself as opposed to coming out to people and being able to share all of who I was.
Isn't it crazy, though, because you mentioned the thing about our cultural ways was always about storytelling and generally dance and music. Like, what happens is that's been for us since the beginning of time. But yet mining has never been there, you know. Footy has never been there. And then you think about also us as artists, like, that's actually cultural again. We're just in a contemporary form.
Yeah.
So I guess there's, yeah, it's sort of catch 22, isn't it?
It's a weird one, because whether you come from an Indigenous family or an Indigenous culture, you know, everyone comes from somewhere different. You're a product of your parents' making, and it depends on where they came from and what they were taught. And for me, I find if you are open and honest with yourself, then you're going to be met with that same openness and honesty from the other side. I mean, that was my personal experience. Again, I've not had any issues, let's say. I had a very very loving family. They just said to me, oh, well, you're just love. We assumed that you would always just love, whether that be whoever it is. But I do know of people who it is so horrendously scary for them to think about coming out to their family, because they either choose themselves and be alone in their mind, or they choose their family and be alone in their cupboard or in their closet. And so it's such a hard thing that I would never, I personally can't articulate. And so therefore, you know, in that, you know, massive degree in Chechnya, imagine, you know, not being able to come out even to your family. And even if you do, your family are told to kill you, or the authorities will. You know, I could never imagine that.
And that's the theme of our radiothon. We still need joy. So we're asking you to donate and join up at joy.org.au to keep joy out loud and proud. We're going to come back in a second.
Just one thing, just to let you know, for those who are listening, you know, if you are in that state of thinking, I want to say something, I want to tell someone, you know when the time is right by following your instinctual knowledge, following your Leon, and knowing that don't live upon what other people tell you. Just know that the time is when you feel is ready, whether that's now or 20 years from now. But just keep it true to yourself.
Thanks, Sarami. We're going to be talking to Zachariah Fielding coming up in a couple of minutes' time. You're on Joy 94.9.
look pretty, keep it sharp, stay on the shelf, don't you move. Look pretty, keep it sharp, stay on the shelf, don't you move.
Yes, that was Ornament with Electric Fields, the band, and a deadly bloody band at that. These guys are basically the potent new music which brings together the brilliance of creativity of the producer, Michael Ross. And Michael Ross and Zachariah with us right now online. How are you?
Hey.
Good, thank you.
Oh, so good to hear your voices. Can you hear us?
Just a little bit. Hang on, just one moment.
That's better. We can hear you better. You need to stick your mouths closer to that microphone if you can. So just so people don't know, Electric Fields is actually a traditional language, I guess, music that's, you know, traditional songs connected with pop electronical sounds. And the way that these guys do it is just so unique. And I had the opportunity to see them perform live at the Urine Boy Festival, and it was just bloody brilliant. And you guys, you know yourself how much people, you drew people in. It was just like a magnet, you know, a moth to a flame even. It was just, they were blown away. And a lot of people never heard you before. So and considering as well, Matt Coleman hasn't.
I've never heard you guys, and I think I'm now your biggest fan. That was ridiculous. I was jamming out in the studio here. Love and life.
Love and life. Oh, thank you, Matt.
But you guys have been pretty busy, so let us know what you've been doing.
Well, geez, yeah, well, that music, that song you just heard, that was released about, I guess, 10 months ago, roughly. And in that time, since we released it, we went to China and did some performances in China and then Scotland. And then we came back and we've been performing around Australia, gigs in Sydney and Melbourne. And then WOMAD just recently, which was a massive gig for us. And out of that, now we're doing like the AFL halftime and coming up. and talking to Joy FM. I mean, come on, this is we're happy to be here.
You've made it. You can hang up your microphone.
Yeah.
But not only that, I'll just tell you that I heard your music. I was telling Zach this before. The first time I heard your music, I was living out on the Nunundurra lands, and I used to play it on the radio out there. And the little kids, they would gather around the speaker and listen to it because they could sing along, because it was in Pitandurra or Pitandurra. And they loved it because they could sing along in their own language and dance to it as well. So it's this amazing combination of mixing that music in with traditional language. It's so clever and unique. It's, I don't want to, you know, blow smoke up anywhere, but it's pretty incredible.
Oh, thank you. Wow, that's so great to hear about all those kids dancing around too. Well, Zach plays the music when the kids are in Mimalee at the school. They play it over the loudspeaker. Tell us about that, Mala.
Yeah, they just, like, really love it. You hear them, like, in their lunch breaks and their recess breaks, how they're just, like, walking towards the store, and I'm like, I happen to be walking past them as well, and they're like, oh, you do that, ee! And it's an in-mother song. And it's just really nice to, you know, hear them, you know, listen to that and like it in a very positive way. And I'm glad that, you know, because I remember being a child back in the communities as well, and that's where the whole influence of Deep Forest came from.
So yes.
I'm just like, you know, I just feel really happy and honoured that, you know, you could do something for a child that really, you know, resonates with them.
It's
that
funny
type of music, yeah.
Sorry, it's funny you referred to Deep Forest, because it's funny, I was just listening to the song before and I thought this, somehow there's some sort of a resonance in what I remember as a child, and it was Deep Forest. So that's obviously one of your biggest influences. So, yeah, wow.
Yeah. Our art teacher back in the community used to, like, play Deep Forest for us to play Sleeping Logs or meditate, because I'm sure he didn't want to, like, interact with the kids that much, because he just had this real, I don't know, I feel like he had a very bad temper, and he just put on and then, like, make us listen to it and make face masks and things, but he just came across very angry, I don't know.
For people who don't know... For people who don't know, why don't you set the scene and actually tell everyone where Mimalee is? Like, where remote... Like, try... Give them... Paint the picture of how remote the area is that you actually grew up in.
Us in the central deserts, right in the centre, just where the border is, Northern Territory, South Australia, but more South Australia. But, yeah, my community is the second community into the APY land, and my community is beautiful. It's surrounded by rocks. And this time around, right now, would be perfect for people to go and visit it, or, you know, people that have been there know that this is the right time, because it's just nothing but nice wet rocks, and it just shines the community. And it has its, you know, negatives and its positives, but, like, for me, when I'm away from home, I just think of all the beautiful things of my community. But, yeah, it's just like, you know, home is home. So just really tap into home, and that's what it feels like. Mimalee feels like home. So whatever your home feels like, call it Mimalee.
Actually, Zachariah, we were just discussing earlier in regards to, I guess, being in, you know, with cultural protocol as such, being a gay man and being brought up in community, in a, you know, I guess in a remote community of that. How did you personally find, I guess, that experience growing up? I guess I didn't know much about how you came out, but whether, you know, you were sure when you were young, and what was your approach, I guess?
Well, I think I was very fortunate to be molded by a very loving family, and not just sexuality was spoken about. You know, you just was respected as just who you are and what your status was and whose child you was. So I come from a very big family. My father is the youngest of 12, and I think it comes with the status of your bloodline as well, where people cannot hurt you or, like, say anything against you. Or I was just very lucky to have a protective father and a very protective mother, so I never got to experience any of that in my community until I moved to Adelaide.
Yeah, it's just... I guess, yeah, what you mentioned before about, you know, I guess the family being the stronger sort of family background or leadership in regards to kin, even. Like, is there anything that, I don't know, personally, because I was talking to Chris and Maddie about how being brought up in a small community and raised up in, you know, a town that's mining, it's, I guess, the expectations of becoming a man were always
You
know?
So, oh, my gosh, yes. Okay.
Yeah, so, like, looking at how you knew, because you're obviously quite a feminine person, like,
yes,
were you naturally like that, and were you always accepted as being that, I guess?
Yeah. Okay, yes, I was very flamboyant. I used to put tissues in my chest, like breast assist, and I'd be hoping that the boys would get it, because I didn't have facial hair, and I used to, like, be really sneaky, but all those little other kids in my class were like, no, that's a boy. So they fucked up. I mean, they ruined my chances. but it did scare me as I was getting older. I was like, you know, oh, shit, I'm 10 years old now. I'm 11 years old now. I'm 12 years old now. And once that 13-year-old come in, and then, you know, knowing that once he's 15, you get grabbed and you go through, you know, the protocols and the law, the animal law back home. And it scared me. It really did. My father kind of wanted me to do it. He forced me, but forced me with, like, just do it, you know, like, for the love of it. Not, like, you need to do it. Like, just can you just do it for me, you know? And I was just like, it just doesn't fit. It doesn't feel right for me to do that. You know, I love my culture and I love my language. I love everything that Anungu represents. But having a taste of the Western world and not being fully accepted here as well. I was like, you know, I hit 18. I'm not going to become a man. It really did dent my relationship with my father and my mother for a while. But we came to a conclusion of, you know, we're going to just let this go and be loved. And my younger brothers are men now. Like, when I go back home, my brothers are like traditional cultural men, and it does, like, upset me at times, because I'm the oldest of nine and my four brothers after me are men, but they treat me with love, so I'm okay. I don't know, I just don't know how to explain it right, but I don't know what to say.
Right, that's fine.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but I do understand. I don't know how, because I know that in my community it can be a little bit brutal. I've seen it, you know, around me, but it never really affected me.
I was going to ask, like, you saying that you were very lucky because of your family status, but were there other boys within your community grew up gay that didn't have the
Definitely.
Protection of their family? And what was that like?
It really upset me, you know, like, hearing their story. Like, they had times where they wanted to commit suicide, and, like, when we started going to school, I had a lot of friends that were from the AQI land as well that were secretly gay and stuff, and that we would hang out at Woodville High School because we had to, you know, because there was no year 11 or 12 back in my community, so we had to leave and sacrifice that, you know, education side of things. But my friends that were, it was hard for me to understand what they were going through, but I took the role of being the big brother and being more, they gave me that energy of being more extra flamboyant because they would be behind me watching and observing for them to let themselves be free in a way. And now they're just flying and they got boyfriends and it pisses me off.
Hey, Zachariah. With your music, you know, obviously, because you see that strong traditional influence, but working with the fella as Michael Ross, who has been brought up with, you know, more, I guess, he's been brought up with a lot of your own experiences, Michael, and your influences. From what I see, you've had a lot of strong influences from Daft Punk and Joni Mitchell and, you know, David Bowie, to be, you know, just to name a few. And I think, like, going from that, I guess, mainstream sort of music and hitting into traditional language and using it with your own perspective, I guess, and obviously collaborating, like, how did that feel for you? Like, was it a huge step for you?
It wasn't really a huge step, just in the sense of working with Zachariah felt so natural, and we just collaborated wherever the feeling took us. So It's not like we sort of set out specifically to create, you know, let's make music that sounds like this, mixed with that, mixed with that. It wasn't sort of necessarily the intention. We just started creating together, and each idea, you know, took its own path. But I must admit, you know, that because I grew up in Logan City in Queensland, which is very, very suburban. And even though it is quite diverse in many ways, the street and the suburb that I grew up in, you know, was very, very narrow, very closed and very narrow towards queer people, towards, you know, people of colour, towards people, like anything outside of the, you know, the barbecue culture that Australia has. And so, you know, ever since leaving school, ever since leaving home, I've been kind of broadening my mind in every single way possible. But working with Zach, I'm actually learning Anangor language. I'm actually learning about Anangor culture and beliefs and ceremony and weaving and all of these things that I didn't even know about. And, you know, and as much as I love, you know, where I grew up, I never felt attached to the home, to the land before. I never felt that, but I actually do feel that now. I feel that now working with Zachariah, because I'm learning about all of the footsteps, you know, that have walked this land for, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of years. I mean, and all of those footprints, all of those dances and all of that culture is still in the land. And now that, you know, I'm a part of Zachariah's Anangor family, I'm also a part of the Kaurna family here in Adelaide. You know, I feel at home finally. I feel like, yeah, I this is my home now, because it's true. It really is, it's the real deal. So that was a huge eye opener for me. And, you know, if anyone hasn't actually had the chance to really learn about culture, it's not something that you can just do by kind of going, yes, you know, I mean, it's one thing to be aware of what's happening politically, not sort of thing, but to actually learn the stories, to actually weave something, to actually learn the language, that it is a new, it is a bigger step. It is a much bigger step, and you really start to feel it. That is, I have never felt that before.
We're talking to Adelaide, your Electric Fields on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Urban Dreaming with Siri and Matt. We're going to be back in just a minute.
This is Davey, and you're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy. Deadly.
You're on Joy 94.9. We are talking to Adelaide, your Electric Fields, about their music, about growing up in community, about being queer and Indigenous. You are on Urban Dreaming. Don't forget, it is our radiothon. We're asking the question, why do we still need joy? We've talked about a few of the reasons why we still need joy, but we need you to help us out. Head to joy.org.au to sign up or renew your membership now until May 30 and go into the draw to win a Holden Astra, or donate while you're there. Top it up to whatever, just round it off. And if you do a donation of $10 or more, you go into a 9-day cruise to New Caledonia.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Get me on it.
Come on, brother, we need to donate right now. So that's $10, guys. It's not much at all. It's actually, that's petty cash, man. So seriously, get it into your wallets or your pockets there and start throwing some money at Joy, because I think it's something that seriously needs to be invested in. I've only been with the station for the last 2 years, and I just see how much it's improved my own personal lifestyle in regards to, you know, my own, I guess, my own way of approach in life, and how I can make a change, how I can make a difference. And it gives people the opportunity to create their own platforms, you know. So, yeah, guys, it needs to be here. So please, donate.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, it gives you know, it gives that voice to things and people that you wouldn't necessarily come across, like the guys from Electric Fields. As I said, I'm blown away by them. I just bloody love everything about them. And we've been having a chat. You guys are there, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you'll be able to get outside of your house by the time I'm finished pumping you guys up. but if you haven't heard them, get on it. Electric Fields, they are phenomenal. Hey, we were talking just before about how you, Michael, have found home with Zach's family in terms of learning about the culture and the history of the land and the animal stuff. So, that really resonates with me. My story very quickly is that for a great deal of my life, I wasn't able to talk about my culture or my family. I'm now 28, but for the first 25 years, I wasn't allowed to talk about it. I've got 10 brothers and sisters. I'm the only one that identifies. And so for me, you know, starting to learn about culture and meeting, you know, other creatives, other Indigenous creatives, is giving me a sense of home and a place to be. And so that really resonates beautifully. And how does that sort of work into your music? How does the language and the electropop meld together to give us the beautiful sounds that we've heard?
Well, I mean, jump in wherever you want here, but with the language stuff, quite often what we've done is I've improvised something musically, so I'll improvise, just make up some chords and some rhythms, and then I'll throw it over to Zach to improvise some lyrics and melodies, and then he'll throw it back to me, and then I'll, you know, play with those vocal takes and maybe change some notes here and there and then switch them around, and then I'll throw it back to him and he'll add some more. So it's a back and forth. I mean, and honestly, it really is the same. I mean, it can happen the same whether he improvises in language or not, but when he does improvise in language, I think the biggest difference, at least musically and creatively, is just the culture that it conjures up. You know, all of the stuff that comes with speaking in such an old language, it's not just the sound or the shape, and it's not even just the meaning. It's all of it. And so, I know it kind of, because, you know, we're all, regardless of our, where our parents are born, we are all part of the same family. And so because Zach has a much clearer pathway to his ancestors than I do, because I don't quite know the pathway to my ancestors. But so for me, it sort of helps me to connect with my humanity, you know, like just gives me this, like, we're all in this together. We wrote some lyrics about that tonight.
What did Zach say then? Couldn't hear him.
Well, if we tell you, then we're going to give away and so we haven't written yet. But we started writing it tonight.
Yeah, right.
Definitely. Like, what do you think? Like, so what was the question again?
Do you know what? It was just ramblings, and then I was hoping you'd just fill in some gaps. But I was just, you know, for me to have something, you know, where culture and history and language is thrown into our mainstream is such a beautiful thing. I love that our culture is slowly bleeding its way into the mainstream with your stuff, and it's music like yours that does that. So I just want to congratulate you. I'm still just in awe.
Wow, thank you.
Well, I was in awe, and when I first met you, Zach, actually, because I remember you on The Voice, and you know, and I'd just come out of the television show myself, and we were both like, "Oh my God, you were in!" And I'm like, "You were in!" And yeah. And then we had a, you know, a little charge up together. It was great, and knowing that you went from The Voice, you went from working with Crystal and then going freelance. I guess you're going solo from there at the time. I can see, obviously, the complete transition that you had to go through in order to get to where you are now. But do you think you made the right decision?
I think I was in the right place at the right time. I think I was supposed to learn off of the show and learn off of Crystal and just everybody in general before that as well. But I'm really happy with how it turned out. And I go by the schedule of the universe. And wherever it takes me and whatever it wants me to do, then I'll do it. If it resonates with me when I hear our assistant say, oh, you got this, you got that, and I'm like, I know. There's something about my, from this whole Electric Fields journey now, I feel more of myself as a spirit, as an energy, and that's how our people were. They fed off of energy. They spoke with energy, through energy, of energy. So I'm slowly tapping into that, and I'm feeling really, really good because I'm understanding who I am and what my I feel like I know what I'm supposed to do. But I don't think I'll be a singer for a long time. I don't think I'll do that. I think I'm a healer, and I have the opportunity to do that with Electric Fields and the music that we make and the visions that come with that. And yeah, just continue on healing. That's all I really want to do.
I think the universe definitely aligned you two together.
Yeah.
And what we call, from our country, is called Leon. So that's the sense of belonging or your sense of calling. And, yeah, you know, I just hearing your music and knowing that I got to see you guys' live performance, you can just see how much your chemistry is so strong together. Hey, we're going to play one of your other songs now because...
Which one?
Well, that's where... I'll get Chris to announce it, and because he's got the music in front of him. But I do know it. I do know it. Is it Shade
Away?
Yes, I thought so. So, guys, we're going to play this song for you, and this is Electric Fields. So you're on Urban Dreaming. The time is now 8:54, and maybe after that we'll have a quick goodbye. Check it out.
Have you seen the light shining in the ghetto?
That's Adelaide Duo, Electric Fields on Joy 94.9, streaming live at joy.org.au or in Melbourne on your radio. Don't forget, it is Radiothon. We are asking you to dig deep and help keep Joy Out Loud proud. Keep us on air. Head to joy.org.au, and every membership that you sign up or renew, you go into the draw to win a Holden Astra as well as a slew of other prizes. And by slew, I mean two other prizes. And if you donate $10 or more, you go into the draw to win a 9-day cruise to New Caledonia, and every $10 is an entry. So if you do 20, that's two. Well, I won't bang on about that because we've got Electric Fields on the line. We've got to say goodbye.
How good is to hear your song on the radio? Deadly, eh?
It's awesome.
Well, not just that. For Urban Dreaming, man, like, it's great to have you guys, you know, as our special guests. And I wish you all the best in your future, because I know you'll do just deadly. I know you'll just kick ass in the industry. So,
and we'll see you very soon as well.
Oh, man, we'll be over there soon in Adelaide, I'm sure.
Yeah, guys.
Yeah, we'll be back in Melbourne at some point soon.
Is that... do you have a date? Because I'm fangirling, so I'd like to see you.
I'm
Ziggle.
Are you offering me a date? What?
He is.
Thanks, guys.
He's not just fangirling, he's thirsty. Thank you so much. It was amazing to talk to you. Best of luck with everything, and we're gonna do goodbye from here. Thank you very much. Catch you later.
Good night.
Love you guys. Thanks again.
Night. Bye.
Bye. Yeah, good night. See you, everyone.
Matt and Suri, good night. It was great to share this hour with you, this Radiothon hour. I've got a big shout out to Liam from Albert Park and Matthew from Moorloo Bank, and they have signed up as members, as well as Richard from Woodville West. Okay, and they've all signed up, which means they've all gone into the running to win the car.
So thanks again for tuning into Urban Dreaming, and bon voyage, Uncle Vils, if you're on us on Stamper and Tattles. And also next is Triple Bypass. So tune in. Bye bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Urban Dreaming with your hosts, Sue Rummy and Miss Elanius, a show that aims to bridge the gap and close the divide. You can stay up to date by adding us on your Facebook and download the podcast from joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.